Let's read James chapter 3, verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness.
So who is wise? That's the question for tonight. Who is wise? Take a look around the room, you know. Who's wise as you look around the room? Who do you think of? You can think beyond the room. Think of family, colleagues, people at uni, that kind of thing. And if you're watching at home, you know, looking around the room might be a bit small to figure out who is wise. Let's expand our mind. Who is wise? And I'll give you an example. One person that comes to my mind, John Ridgway, mission partner. And he's been training people all over the world using Zoom. He was on Zoom before everyone else was on Zoom. He was training people all over the world because people wanted him to give them his wisdom. And there's a lot we don't know about John Ridgway because, you know, he's been far away as a mission partner. But I'm looking forward to hearing more about his legacy at his funeral on Monday week, 8 days. And we'll put that out in social media and things about the timing of that so that you can jump on and hear about that. But just coming back to the person you thought of, like, who did you think of? Who is wise? What makes that person wise in your eyes? What have they got that makes them stand out? Do they have a huge brain, you know? Are they a lover of wisdom? A bit like Aristotle the philosopher or something like that. Are they skilled with their hands? Can they invent stuff like Leonardo da Vinci? Are they peace-loving? And do they have that character and leadership like Nelson Mandela, the president? Are they all theological like John Calvin, the theologian? Are they charitable like Mother Teresa the nun? Are they really smart like my 3-year-old daughter who outwits me every single day? She manages to get me to spoon feed her at dinner time, and she's 3, and she goes to preschool and feeds herself all day, but somehow she outwits me. And this morning she came into my study and asked for one piece of paper, and she ended up taking away 4. She's very clever. And then one of the other kids came into me this morning and said, "Hey, Dad, guess what? I said to Zoe, you're rude." And she said, "I'm not rude, I'm Elsa." I think that's a great reply, don't you reckon? She is so smart. Anyway, what makes someone wise? Today we're thinking about Christian wisdom. And Christian wisdom's different. It's distinct. It's known for these 3 things up here on the screen. Firstly, it comes from above. It comes down from God. Christian wisdom. It's not from earth. It's not from human discovery. Secondly, character's really important. It's less about your capability, it's less about your kind of competence and charisma, and it's more about your character. And at the heart of character is humility. Humility is key. It's a key characteristic of a wise personality, the humble and lowly person rather than the proud and boastful person. And all of this is a downward arrow. Christian wisdom is a downward arrow. So we pick this up in verse 13, some of these ideas here. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. Show it. Show your wisdom. It sounds like everything else we've looked at in James, doesn't it? If you have faith, show it. And when you listen to the word, do it. If there's a gap between those things, fix them. Who is wise and understanding? Show it in the humility that comes from wisdom. What's the opposite of humility? J. James goes into that in verse 14. He talks about selfish ambition. And you see here, selfish ambition's an upward arrow. Humility is a downward arrow. And so they're actually opposite. So verse 14 says, but if you harbour bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. So there's the phrase come down, coming down from heaven. There's this other type of wisdom in inverted commas that doesn't come down. And it's in inverted commas because it's not wisdom. So he's like, wisdom, it's not wisdom. It's not in line with God's wisdom. Why? He goes on to say that it's earthly, meaning it's something from the ground up, from us, from people, from the world. And it's also unspiritual. It's very materialistic and unspiritual. It's disconnected from God, the source. And it's also demonic, it says there, which is a very strong way of putting it. It bubbles up from below rather than raining down from heaven. And so it's kind of a base wisdom, pushing up from the underworld, coming up from the bottom, and striving with selfish ambition to make a great name for itself, and dragging everything else down by clawing its way to the top. So, James says, if you're a Christian and you live that way, you are denying the truth. To deny the truth literally means to drag down the truth. You're pulling it down because you're not living up to the standards of God. So that's the contrast between Christian wisdom and worldly wisdom. Worldly wisdom's an upward arrow that drags people down, whereas Christian wisdom's a downward arrow that builds people up. So if it was a seesaw, it looked like this, the Christian wisdom would be coming down to the earth and lifting others up, whereas worldly wisdom would be shooting for the sky at the expense of others and lowering them. So think about your own seesaw. What does your seesaw look like? Are you down to the earth to serve others? Are you striving for the top and competing with others? Now, it's interesting here, isn't it? I think there's a blend of both in all of us, and maybe our seesaw moves around. So this is what we're thinking about tonight. There's a lot of ambition here on the North Shore, especially in the schools systems, which we celebrate. They're very prestigious, a lot of the local schools in our area. And a lot of them are Christian schools, and so there's this Christian ambition, and it mixes with a variety of members of, whether it be families or parent bodies or school leadership, you get human wisdom mixing with Christian wisdom. Sometimes they blend together unnoticed in a kind of contradiction, and sometimes they become a conflict with parents at schools fighting over it, and, you know, there's different values. They don't go easily together. Christian wisdom and secular wisdom don't mix, but they seem to be able to mix in our schools, they seem to be able to mix in our hearts and mix in our homes. The ego makes us really brave to set big goals because we expect something grand from our lives. Or we compete and shoot higher just to keep up with our impressive friends who are just outperforming and they're already making more money and doing things like that. And family pressure, the household pressure that pushes us to strive so hard can lead us to wanting just to prove we're worthy. And so we become ambitious to somehow gain our self-worth. But none of these are Christian forms of wisdom. So Christian wisdom is ambitious with a different focus and frame. Christian wisdom is lowering the seesaw away from me and my prestige and my income, and it's elevating others. C.S. Lewis put it like this: the load or weight or burden of my neighbor's glory should be laid daily on my back, a load so heavy that only humility can carry it, and the backs of the proud will be broken. So what's he saying here? He's saying that humility actually lifts a really heavy burden off other people's backs. Humility is ambitious to serve other people, and in doing so is able to carry a load that the proud can't carry. Humility takes you to places to do the kinds of things that proud people won't bother. It's a heavy load to carry people in humility. And that's where Christian ambition takes us. Christian wisdom is ambitious, but it's a different kind of ambition. It's ambition for others. It's ambition for the glory of God. It often will get up early and go to bed late, working really hard, being busy to do good because there's not enough hours in the day to do all the things that we strive to do. It's balanced with rest because we recognize our finitude under God. But it's not about me and my prestige or me and my comfort. It's about God and others and contributing for the sake of others. So what does your daily life look like? And maybe here's a helpful question for you to kind of reflect inwardly. What load does your daily life carry that only humility can carry? What weight do you carry in your week that a proud person wouldn't bother, but only the humble will carry? Christian wisdom and worldly wisdom are incompatible. James splits them down the middle to show that they're hopelessly incompatible. They're opposites. One goes up, the other one goes down. Those who go down in humility create peace. Those who go up in selfish ambition create disorder. And so this next picture here, slide. Disorder is when you push for the top. Peace is when you humbly are beneficial towards others. So peace is good. Peace is wise. Wisdom from above is peace-loving. And that's where James takes us by the end of our passage, the last verse there in verse 18. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. He mentions peace so many times in this passage because that's the outcome of heavenly wisdom is peace. But the opposite's disorder. And disorder's bad, and you can see in verse 16 that it talks there about the chaos of wisdom from below. It says, where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. See the opposites? Disorder versus peace, evil versus righteousness. So you see this in life and not just in the Bible. When you get out there and you see selfish ambition running amok, it just creates chaos wherever you go. You see it in homes when two people in a household are striving for their own benefit and tallying mistakes, escalating the volume of their yelling to make a point. They become more controlling and aggressive to gain benefit to self, but in doing so they can destroy their household and damage themselves. You see it in the workplace. We've heard from Liv about the workplace. When two colleagues are striving to move up, striving for themselves, and they compete with each other and critique the team. They're not a team player. They create distrust in the team. They break teams down. They talk to the people around them about the weaknesses of others, and they elevate themselves and hide their mistakes. They drag the business down because their goal is selfish. You see it in politics when two nations in the world are striving for their own benefit, boasting about their greatness, and they underwrite the bills for tanks and missiles. But when they escalate the violence, there's casualties, devastating casualties all around. All these examples are the disorder of selfish ambition. Humility is the opposite, isn't it? Humility is good for everyone. It brings peace. I heard a story last week about a kid. He said his parents didn't want him to study arts because his parents said there's no jobs in arts. There's no jobs when you finish arts. I'm not going to make you raise your hands who's doing arts here. So he did arts. That's how it works, right? When your parents say don't do arts, he went and did arts. And one of his good mates in arts was in love. They were the real arty arts type. So he was in love with shoe design. And so he was making basketball. One of his mates was making a basketball prototype shoe. And it was so good, you'd be able to, it was the kind that you'd see in a shop. He's doing a really good job of it. Anyway, they finished arts and they couldn't get a job. It's not the end of the story, by the way. So they graduated, there was no jobs. He was feeling, a little bit sheepish before his parents. One day he got a phone call. There was a job opportunity to design basketball shoes with a reputable company. He thought, this is great, but I have a friend who that's his lifelong dream. So he referred the company on to his friend and his friend got the job. For the next 5 years, he did things like internships. He made his way through. Down the line, his friend actually got him a job. And one day, his friend was in a meeting with Michael Jordan because he designed some jewelry and Michael Jordan was checking it out and he said, hey, check out these shoes my friend designed, because they're always lifting each other up. This is an example of how humility that serves another is beneficial to all. You get people working together like that and the outcome's good for all. Humility is kind of the long game, but it wins in the end. Humility is good, peace is good. And the last point we're going to look at in this verse, in this passage, is verse 17, where it gives us a fuller picture of how the heavenly wisdom builds that peace, that constructive environment. So let's look at verse 17, and there's seven dot points here, actually. So on the screen, seven dot points here about the way of peace. We're going to read all of these in one crammed verse. This is all the different things that peace brings, heavenly wisdom brings. This is heavenly wisdom brings all these things. So let's go through them one word at a time. Firstly, heavenly wisdom is pure. And pure means innocent and holy. This is about integrity from within. And it's the inner integrity that leads to the outer life. This is where you are genuine on the inside and it flows over. Next word, heavenly wisdom is peace-loving. Peace-loving means harmonious and it sucks the oxygen out of conflict and builds harmony. It creates a safe environment to get along because it's humble. Third, heavenly wisdom is considerate. And considerate, people that are considerate are understanding and they're interested in you. But instead of insisting on their rights, they seek to understand you and empathize with you and benefit you. And that is the way of humility. Heavenly wisdom is also submissive. And submission is a heavenly word, even though it's become unpopular because of abuse and power imbalances. The ultimate form of submission, submission to God. The ultimate example of submission, Jesus, who submitted himself to the Father even to the point of death, death on a cross. We submit to God's laws. That's orderly. And I was just thinking about all of the different ways that we submit in life. And there's a whole lot of compliance we do for social good. Think of all the stop signs that you stopped at while driving to church tonight. If everyone just did whatever they saw fit, if everyone just took everything into their own hands, it's antisocial. So we know that there's a certain amount of compliance which is good for all. It's social. That's what submission's about. Next one, heavenly wisdom is merciful, full of mercy. Mercy means helping people in need, and it's merciful because I didn't cause the problem, but I'm willing to go out of my way to help. It's merciful because I'm going to suffer a loss with my time. I mean, time's precious. I'm going to suffer a loss potentially with my resource, my money, but it's worth it. That's what mercy is. And that comes from humility, to care about someone's needs, to lower yourself for the benefit of others. Next, heavenly wisdom is impartial. Impartial means that you don't show favoritism, and in the book of James, we're hearing all about rich and poor, and the rich that kind of abuse and take and are all about themselves versus the poor who will inherit the kingdom. You know, there's this great contrast, and the danger is that people will associate with the rich to gain benefit. You know, you want to hang out with rich and influential people rather than being willing to befriend, as Jesus did, the sinners and tax collectors, or in the context of church life, not to just seek the people that are the easiest company, but to be hanging out with all kinds of people in love, from the strangest to the greatest. Impartial. Next word, heavenly wisdom, is sincere. Sincerity is you don't act. It's not like plastic facade that you put on at church. It's genuine from the inside, which relates back to the first word, pure. When you got purity, you don't have to act about it. So there's the 7 dot points about the character of Christian wisdom. But put over all of that, humble or humility is the thing that makes it all work. Pride can't carry that. That's 7 traits of humility. This is living in God's wisdom. And for all of our failings, as we've mixed human wisdom with God's wisdom, and we're trying to work in the world and find our way forward, for all of our failure, the great example that we look to, of course, is Jesus Christ. Jesus was all these things. He was pure and peace-loving and considerate and submissive, merciful, impartial, sincere, and wasn't he humble? Coming from heaven to help. Dying on a cross to give his life as an act of service. That's mercy. And so God exalted him. Didn't God take Jesus and raise him from that cross into heaven and gave him the name above every name? That's the journey of humility that Jesus took. And he is our great example. And so here's the point. The wise person is the one who looks the most like Jesus Christ. When you looked around, when you thought about that person, what was it that made them wise? Well, the wise person is the one who looks most like Jesus Christ. And how we all need to grow. James goes on in the next chapter to talk about coming humbly before God. Coming humbly and confessing your sins. He talks about, wash your hands, you sinners, purify your hearts, you double-minded. And here's the clincher. He says, humble yourself before the Lord and he will lift you up. This is the response that we're being called to in James. Humble yourself before the Lord and he will lift you up. Come to him and say, I am making a mess of this. All the selfish ambition that I have, I'm making a mess of this. Humble yourself before the Lord, and he will lift you up. He saves those who come to him for salvation. More than that, just as God raised Jesus to heaven, so heaven is for the humbled. As we come in faith and depend on Jesus for our salvation, the future is good. The future is glory as we join with Jesus in his glory. And as God looks, and as in the end Jesus brings that day of where he looks at our life and he says, well done, good and faithful servant, or, you know, the chilling opposite, we find our confidence in Jesus and we take great delight that those who are saved are also able to be pleasing to God. That God actually looks at us and says, that wisdom, that humility, well done. It's pleasing to God. He looks at you when you live in humility and he says, well done. So who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. And in the end, the wise person is the one who looks most like Jesus Christ.
Welcome back, Elliot. It is time for Q&A. There are a bunch of questions up there. Of course, we won't get to all of them today. Will there be a time later in the week?
Yeah, let's do that in the next couple of days, probably Tuesday.
Great. So that'll be in our Facebook group. If you aren't in that and you'd like to be able to access that, please come and speak to me or Josh or anyone with the I'm New Lanyards, and they'll make sure you can have a look at that later in the week. First up, a great question from Sarah. She's asked, people pleasers and pushovers are generally given a bad rap. What's the line between humbly serving and being taken advantage of?
It's such a good question, and maybe in the way it's phrased, people pleasing and humility, I just make very clear, are totally not the same thing. There's a certain, like, think of Jesus Christ and the power of his humility and whether he was pleasing people. So Jesus was humble and powerful, serving the good of all, calling out right and wrong, and he was doing it to please his heavenly Father, not for the benefit of pleasing people.
That's really helpful. He did upset a lot of people, but he is the one that we should look to as our example. Eleanor's asked, is it really being humble if we're just doing it to get a benefit later? Also, sometimes when we're humble to others, they don't reciprocate. What do we do then? So two kind of questions there.
So we don't do humility ultimately so that it'll reciprocate in the end. The act of humility is good in itself, regardless of the outcome. And humility is the blessing, not just to others, but to you, because if we all were humble, there'd be an equilibrium that would benefit all. But it gets imbalanced with selfish ambition, doesn't it? It's like it gets lopsided and tips like that seesaw, and it ruins everything. There's a great essay by C.S. Lewis called The Weight of Glory. I quoted it tonight. It's the famous one where he talks about kids playing in a muddy puddle rather than going to the beach and enjoying the ocean where there's a better experience. And he's talking about the glory of heaven and what does it actually mean? And he said, I don't like the idea of being a luminescence, like I'm going to be some like shining light. He's like, I don't like the idea of fame, because what's fame in the end anyway? It sounds more of, you know, the devil than of God. So in the end, he wrestles with what is the glory that we seek? And I'd encourage you, it's online and the internet's just 7 pages or so long. Go have a read and see what he wrestles with and what he comes to. But he comes back to the humility of being a childlike, a child of God, and that knowledge of pleasing God being the primary glory that you experience in your life now and in the future to come.
And that's really all we need to strive for. Let's go two more. I'm going to ask, does this mean career ambitions are bad?
I thought this question would come up, and I'm really glad it did. I've had a few chats off the back of this morning where there's people that are very motivated and they just wanted to ask this question. And I want to affirm ambition, just to be clear. I'll show it biblically, but ambition is a good thing. Selfish ambition is bad, that's what we've been saying tonight, but there is a godly ambition. And actually, it's interesting, when I looked up the word ambition in the Bible, it took me to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, so I'm there at the moment. And this is a little bit of a different kind of ambition, but 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 10, he's urging brothers and sisters to make it your ambition, verse 11, to lead a quiet life. You should mind your own business and work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders and so that you'll not be dependent on anybody. In lots of parts of the world, not being dependent on anyone is a huge ambition. We kind of take it for granted here. But this is ambition to not be needy on others. If ambition gets you off the couch to do something good, that's godly. But if ambition gets you to claw others down, and that's when it becomes selfish. There's good ambition, and I think what we tried to explain today, the weight that you carry off another person's back, that's good. And if you're going into work, and if you're going into career or whatever you'd like to call it with ambition. Make it ambition to do good rather than ambition to gain for yourself.
Thanks. Really helpful. Last one. If we feel like we don't have a wiser, godlier Christian brother or sister to look up to and learn from, should we pursue a relationship with one? And if so, how?
The life of the church is beautiful, where we get to meet and know each other and have people to look up to. Unfortunately, it's not everyone's experience that they feel deeply connected and have that kind of friendship network. The way we operate at Christchurch is that a lot of that takes place in the growth groups ministry. And so we try and hope or help all people in our church to join that smaller group to build the connections. When you're in those relationships with the smaller group, now we're all sharpening each other as iron sharpens iron, but sometimes the culture is not that level of personal investment that you really feel mentored. I'd say pray about it. It can be a bit of a luxury for everyone in a church to feel personally mentored. Pray about it. Focus on being humbly serving others and trying to help them in their godliness. And get into a growth group, and may the Lord lead you to something good.
That is great advice.